This week on The Reading Life, we'll talk with longtime New Orleans poet Nancy Harris, whose new collection is Beauty Eating Beauty. Amanda McPhillan, the assistant curator of museum programs at the Historic New Orleans Collection, tells us about a new summer book festival. And we'll check in with Susie Penman and Ted O'Brien, who are starting the one-time Don Quixote Book Club, which might just be the right book club for you. Anyone who knows the New Orleans poetry scene knows that Nancy Harris is one of its presiding spirits. Since Everett Maddox passed away in 1989, Nancy has hosted the Sunday poetry readings at the Maple Leaf Bar, and it may very well be the longest-running poetry series in the South. She's the author of The Ape Woman's Story, published in 1989, and Mirror Wars, published in 1999. She's here today to tell us about her new book, Beauty Eating Beauty. Nancy, welcome to The Reading Life.
Thank you very much.
Now, the poems in Beauty Eating Beauty are so passionate and full of energy. The title poem takes its inspiration from a moment that took place actually at the Maple Leaf Bar.
Yes, I was obsessed by that moment, and it haunted me until I could finally write the poem, which is a long poem, but it's in several sections, and part of it takes place in my backyard, which is a few blocks away from the Maple Leaf, and then it shifts to the back patio of the Maple Leaf where we do our readings, and back and forth, and it explores several different versions of beauty eating beauty, I suppose, the concept of who defines what beauty is. And then it works on several different levels, too, because it was written after 9/11, and the idea of war and religion and whose truth. You know, the beauty and the truth, whose truth is the real one. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes into all those different levels but through the imagery.
And here in New Orleans, we often have those images of beauty and kind of terror in nature when a lizard eats a dragonfly. It's a very powerful moment.
Originally, I was going to have the title of the book be Catastrophes after Katrina because of the Greek word strophe, meaning the stanza. But when I looked up the etymology, it also meant a twisting and a turning and a cyclonic movement. But then after Ruth Salvaggio's book came out and she came and read from it, and she had a chapter about the readings at the Maple Leaf, and she quoted some lines from Beauty Eating Beauty. And then when I was talking to her, I realized that the title of the book had to go back to being Beauty Eating Beauty because it was more comprehensive. I didn't want people to think that all the poems in the book were about catastrophes.
Right. As we'll see, they are not. I loved it because I could picture that scene when I read the poem, the whole thing. I really could. And I want to ask you a little bit, do you remember the first time you went to the Maple Leaf Bar?
I can remember because, well, Ralph Adamo, I think, was there with Everett and Franz, and they had the first reading, but I didn't know about it. And then John Stoss, this poet, said, Nancy, you've got to go to these readings. They had one last week, and it was great. So I went to the second one, and then I was hooked for 30-something years.
Right. And what was it that made you keep going back and back and back?
It was just the companionship of meeting with poets every week and getting together and talking and drinking wine. And there weren't very many venues in New Orleans at that point. Lee Grew's Backyard Poetry Theater,
right.
That was only once a month. And Robert Brissotti's readings, I think they weren't on a regular basis at that point. So it was just fun to meet other poets and get together and talk about writing.
And I love the way you call it the Carrollton Riviera.
That was Everett named my house that. It was a joke because I was living in this little single shotgun nearby that was like falling apart. And I had put up this little 12-foot round above ground swimming pool. And so Everett dubbed it the Carrollton Riviera.
I love it. It's the Carrollton Bohemia and the Carrollton Riviera. Now, there are so many inspiring forces in this poem and kind of inspiring spirits. And you use a lot of epigraphs from Gerard Manley Hopkins.
I do. He's one of my favorite poets. in graduate school, I took a seminar on Hopkins, and I really loved his work. Not so much the subject matter in terms of he was a Jesuit priest, but his sprung rhythm mm-hmm. and his imagery. And he influenced a lot of 20th century writers because he was very innovative.
Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of kind of systems inform your poems that I find really interesting, like the runes, mm-hmm. for example. How did you get interested in that?
I think everything goes back to my undergraduate honors thesis at Tulane was on William Burroughs, and my advisors told me to read this book by Eric Newman called The Origins and History of Consciousness, which led me to start reading a lot of Jung. And then Jung brought, you know, the idea of synchronicity drew me into tarot and runes and astrology and, mm-hmm. You know, one thing led to another.
I know. I have to confess, I had to look up some of those things myself, but I was very fascinated by them. Yeah. And then you have this wonderful series of poems of bear dreams. I loved those poems so much. And you talk about James Hillman as a kind of inspiration for that.
He's also a Jungian psychologist. And actually, it turns out, well, I was upset because I always wanted to send him the bear poems, but he died last year. And then I found out his son is a very well-known astrologer.
So and you're interested in astrology
yeah.
as well? Yes.
But his book called Dream Animals, when I was having the dreams, I couldn't really write about them at first. And then I had another encounter with David Carson, who invented the medicine cards. Mm-hmm. And I had a reading with him, so he told me that in my dreams I was trying to push the bear away when the bear was trying to contact me and wanted me to invite it into me. So when I found James Hillman's book, that is exactly what he was talking about with all his patients, that they were all having these animal dreams, but they weren't really a Jungian archetype within the person. They were the archetypes of the actual animal spirits trying to contact the people. And all of a sudden that just clicked, and I was able to start writing all these poems. And I just wrote the last three in the past year. Since the book has been published, I've had more bear dreams. And so I guess I have to keep writing the bear poems.
Oh, please do. Please do. I especially love bear dreams, Y2K. And I mean, right. just the titles draw you right in, but just that presence of the bear. And I think everybody can understand that feeling of engaging with something big and powerful in a dream, and just the way it shimmers in different kinds of shades of meaning.
In James Hillman's book, he had illustrations by an artist. I can't remember her name, but they were all of animals, but they were all at the edge of the canvas, and they're all disappearing because of the environment. So a lot of it goes into a lot of environmental things that I normally probably wouldn't have dealt with if it weren't mm-hmm. for those dreams.
Well, I wonder if you'd read one for us. I'd really like to hear Attack of the Creole Tomato Cats, if you don't mind.
Okay. This poem was written several years after Katrina, and I had one of the first Katrina poems was talking about the fact that I was supposed to be on vacation from work that week, and little did I know, I would have a six-week vacation, and there was a vegetable stand on South Carrollton in front of Notre Dame Seminary, and I always bought my Creole tomatoes from him. And right before Katrina, I bought two big, huge boxes of Creole tomatoes. And when I left, you know, to go to see my brother in Hattiesburg with four dogs and three cats, I threw everything I could in my car. I didn't have much room. And so I brought with me this big bag of Creole tomatoes. And after Katrina, the Creole tomato people didn't come back for a couple of years. And then I saw them one day driving on my way to work. And I went, "You're back." And then I told them about my first Creole tomato poem. So then I wrote this poem because I was so excited that they were back there again. It made everything seem okay again.
Normal, yes.
Right. And actually, tomatoes are toxic to cats, which I didn't realize because my cats kept attacking these tomatoes. Anywhere in my house I would put them, they would find them and try to eat the tomatoes. So this poem is called Attack of the Creole Tomato Cats. Creole tomatoes festing in the sun. They are almost done ripening their souls. Orange, red, yellow, gradients photoshopped, chopped by eyeballs, alive, dancing in the light. My black and white cat's energy senses their presence in the brown paper bag nesting in my purse. Casually strewn on the couch, They crouch, domestic stalkers, nightshade elementals, round, orangey victims, tiny bites, claw marks, dent the asymmetrical fruits, toxic to cats, almost a Halloween joke, All Saints' Day, All Souls' Day. My dogs chase the cats, monochromatic rainbows. I am solemn and aware something has shifted. The Creole tomato truck is back, in front of Notre Dame Seminary on Carrollton Avenue. Seminal visions, new precedents, new president. Katrina, all souls damaged, shadowy Gustav, pales, contraflow, a politician's Trump loyal moment. Tricky assumptions, my angel cat Ariel attacks this poem, pale scythe of claws. There is a new order of Creole tomatoes, marching their flambeaux into my eyes, lambent directions, irises, dilated, Gaussian blurs, glaucoma, cataracts, graduating in the afternoon sun. I will slice them into succulent mandalas, pepper them with cilantro and blue cheese, a soupçon of vinaigrette, consume them, floating rapturously down throat, esophagus, gyrating images pasted onto papery tongue. New Orleans is safe again, the guardian creoles of levees, sainted, scented tomatoes levitate right before my eyes. My dappled cats give glory to God for toxic things to attack. My dogs just are. It's November, and a hurricane playfully hovers over Cuba. My Creole tomatoes are basking in the sun, light ripening.
I love that poem, Nancy.
Thank you.
I really do. We've been talking with Nancy Harris, who keeps poetry lovers coming to the Maple Leaf Bar every Sunday afternoon at 3 o'clock. Her extraordinary new book is Beauty Eating Beauty. It comes straight out of the Carrollton Riviera, and I love it. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Amanda McPhillan is the Assistant Director of Museum Programs at the Historic New Orleans Collection, which is hosting a brand new festival this summer. Welcome to The Reading Life, Amanda.
Thank you so much for having me, Susan.
So, tell us about this new summer book festival.
Great. Well, we're really excited about it. Oftentimes throughout the year, we get requests for a book talk or just somebody to come and do a book signing, and we love to accommodate them as much as we can, but we don't always have time because of our schedule. So we thought it'd be great if we could bring some of the regional publishers together to the collection for a day to be able to display all of their new exciting titles in Louisiana history and culture. And so that's what we're doing.
So who are the publishers who will be on hand?
We have the University Press of Mississippi, Margaret Media, Louisiana State University Press, and our own publication division at the Historic New Orleans Collection.
The Historic New Orleans Collection is so many things. It's a museum, it's a research center, and it's a fabulous publisher. So what are some of the books the collection will have on view?
Yes, we will have a few of our titles on view. One of them is our most recent publication, A Company Man, A Remarkable French Atlantic Voyage of a Clerk for the Company of the Indies by Marc-Antoine Caio and edited by our historian Aaron Greenwald. We have Unfinished Blues, Memoirs of a New Orleans Music Man by Harold Baptiste Jr. and Ernie Cato, the R&B Emperor of New Orleans by Ben Sandmel.
That's been a fabulous success, hasn't it?
Yes, it has. It's really exciting for us.
Now, what are some of the other books the other publishers will be bringing?
Right. Well, I'm really excited about the books that the other publishers are bringing because it just shows you kind of the full range of books that are out there on Louisiana history and culture. For example, Margaret Media is bringing one title called The Axeman of New Orleans by Chuck Hustmeyer. Another one is War of the Pews by the Reverend Jerome Ledoux. And A Quarter Quarter Century of Student Life at Tulane by John Stibbs. And that one, I think, is really going to appeal to our Tulane alum out there. It's the Dean of Students who was at Tulane from about 1940 through the 70s, and just writing about his experience there at Tulane. I mean, that's a really interesting time in American history with a lot of political activity, a lot of activism. And so I think people who went to Tulane will find that a really fascinating read as well. Some of the other books that are going to be there, the University Press of Mississippi will be showcasing one of their new titles, Une Belle Maison, The Lombard Plantation House in New Orleans' Bywater by Frederick Starr.
Oh, that's a wonderful book. And I think people are so curious about that house.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I know I am now. I hadn't heard of it beforehand, but now I want to go see it. And another title they're bringing is Louisiana Women Pioneers of the Environmental Movement by Peggy Franklin and Susan Tucker. LSU Press is bringing one that I think will be great over the summer, River Road Rambler, A Curious Traveler Along Louisiana's Scenic Byway by Marianne Sternberg. I just think if it's the summer and you want to go on some day trips around the state, that could be a really fun read. And this is another really fun read, I think. Spectacular Wickedness, Sex, Race, and Memory in Storyville by Emily Epstein Landau.
I love that book.
Yes. I haven't read it yet, but I'm going to be checking it out at the book fair. And then another one, Clementine Hunter, Her Life and Art. So for all the art lovers out there. And that one's by Art Shiver.
That's great.
Yes.
All right. So this is a fabulous new summer book festival. You're hoping people will kick off their summer reading, aren't you?
Absolutely. Well, it just happens that it's going to be on the first day of summer. So if you're looking for some books to take on vacation or while you're sitting by the pool, especially since it's so hot, or if you're sitting in your air conditioning because it's so hot, you'll need a good book to read. So come and check out our collection.
We've been talking with Amanda McPhillan, Assistant Director of Museum Programs at the Historic New Orleans Collection. Don't miss the first Summer Book Festival, Saturday, June 22nd, from noon to 3:30 at the Historic New Orleans Collection, 533 Royal Street. And it's free.
Yes, indeed. Come buy some books.
Thanks, Amanda.
Thank you.
Mademoiselle, aidez-moi, vous me voyez dans un drôle d'état. Louisiana, c'est passé l'état. Mademoiselle, si vous carry me partout dans le beau carré, le bon temps va rouler. Burgundy, oui, Burgundy, j'ai mal aux pieds, Burgundy, c'est ici.
Susie Penman and Ted O'Brien are both booksellers at the Garden District Bookshop, but that's just their day job. They've recently embarked on a very special summer reading project. Welcome to The Reading Life, y'all.
Thank you.
Good to be here.
So, Ted, what's the deal? This is a special kind of reading group, isn't it?
It is, and it is the Don Quixote one-time-only pop-up book club. We are going to meet to discuss Don Quixote. And we're going to meet in an environment we think that will foster interesting and stimulating conversation at the bar Belloc over in Lee Circle. Me or Susie can't take credit for the idea of this book club entirely. This was sort of came about because somebody who we don't know was really, really excited to be reading Don Quixote and was posting these Facebook messages about it. And another friend of ours, who I will name, his name is Chris Hanna. He's a bartender, a mixologist at the French 75 bar at Arnaud's, was sort of engaging in conversation with him on Facebook about how wonderful Don Quixote was and saying, well, geez, maybe I should read this too. And so I'm looking at these posts thinking, that's a really good idea. Let's get some people together who are really, really excited to read Don Quixote, who might not read it otherwise, and get together and have some drinks and talk about it and just do like one-off book club.
So Susie, how did you get involved?
Well, Ted was totally astounded by what he was reading on Facebook, was very impressed, and was saying, this guy loves Don Quixote, and I've never read it. Have you read it? And I said, no. And it kind of snowballed from there. Ted and I love talking about books together at work. We agree and disagree about, 50-50. And I guess the idea of it really seemed very mutual. I think we both just ended up wanting to read it, and Ted and I have never been in an official book club together. And at first, it seemed like it was just going to be the two of us and Chris, Hannah. And then more and more people started showing interest. So hopefully
Isn't
it'll go
Isn't that interesting? I was just looking online. I love to look at those artist books and weird bindings and things people do. And someone had done this set of three books so the spines would read Me. And I thought, oh, this is so beautiful. I really want this. And one of the books was Don Quixote. And I thought, I should read that again. I mean, there's something about it. It's in the air. Now, you, Ted, particularly think it's important for the Katrinaversary.
It is. We are going to be meeting on August 29th. And I think that sort of having a book discussion about Don Quixote slash giving the finger to peak hurricane season is also a good cause for celebration.
So have you read it before?
I have not. I think it's one of those books that, like many of us, we've all picked it up at some point and started to read it and maybe got a little intimidated by it. I think that having the enthusiasm from somebody, a third party or whatever, sort of brings something else to the table, I guess, is that, geez, I really should give this book another look.
And just the whole idea, tilting at windmills, that's what we do. I mean, all the, don't you think? So why is it just a one-time book club? What makes you think this won't go on if it's fun for everybody?
Well, it certainly could, I suppose. But since it's the first time that we're doing this, and maybe the only time we're doing this, I guess just kind of see what kind of turnout you get, what kind of results you get. For instance, if a bunch of people show up for this and five people read it, then we're probably not going to do it again.
All right. That makes sense.
I think there's a commitment to book clubs that puts people off of book clubs. You know, having to come to the meeting every month. Plus, it's a big book and anyone can start reading it whenever they want, as long as they come to the meeting. So,
right. That's why I thought it'd be good to do this now, because it is a big book. Oh, so you're not in any other book groups together, but are you in any other book groups?
Well, for me, I run the book club, the Garden District Bookshop, and that pretty much takes all my time book club-wise, and now Don Quixote will obviously take a good chunk of time as well.
What happened to the drinking group with the reading problem?
I had to give it up. my liver couldn't take it, and there's too much reading.
What about you, Susie?
I'm in a book club with my boyfriend. It's just the two of us.
Excellent. That's And how often do you meet?
Every day. We try to read one book a month and just talk about it as we read it. We had this grand plan at the beginning to have like themed meetings and all of it, but we read one book together a month.
Oh, I think that's a great project. So for this one, are you recommending any specific edition? Are you?
Yes, I kind of fancy the Grossman translation, which is published by HarperCollins. Just from my own perspective, when I've previously tried to read Don Quixote, I've been kind of put off by the dullness of the prose or whatever. And I think with this particular edition, it's really, really kind of the word rollicking comes to mind. It just comes across as very funny and very engaged. Grossman has translated a number of really, really great books. So I don't think she took any liberties and made it some kind of a, you know, faux translation. But I think that the fact that the prose is so readable is what would bring people to the table, as opposed to those really, really awful translations that may be accurate that have come out previously.
So are we going to have music from Man of La Mancha?
That would be great. I think having Man of La Mancha playing in the background would be great.
Do we have to have costumes?
Have a big windmill in there. I haven't talked to anybody at Bilac yet about having themed cocktails, but I think that conversation is going to occur.
So where can people go for more information?
We're going to develop a Facebook page, and it should be fairly easy to find. If you put in Don Quixote Book Club in the search box, I doubt you'll get more than one hit, and that'll be us.
Ted and I are both on Facebook. There's also a Facebook page for the bookshop, Garden District Bookshop. He and I are working most days there, so you can approach us in person or online.
All right, readers out there. So sometime, you know, over the summer, get a copy of Don Quixote, start reading, and then we can all get together Thursday, August 29th at 7 at Belloc. That's on Lee Circle. And we can talk about one of the great novels of our time. So thank you, Susie.
Thank you.
Thanks, Ted.
Thank you so much, Susan.
Thank you.
what's on tap in the literary life this week. The Historic New Orleans Collection's new exhibit, Pipe Dreams, Louisiana Under the French Company of the Indies, 1717 to 1731, opens Tuesday, June 18th. Also at the collection at 533 Royal Street, check out the first Summer Book Festival Saturday, June 22nd, from noon to 3:30 in the Counting House. The festival will feature a curated selection of recent publications from the Historic New Orleans Collection, Louisiana State University Press, the University Press of Mississippi, and Margaret Media. You can meet today's guest, Amanda McPhillan, at the festival. Just a reminder, the West Bank Writers Group meets every Tuesday at 6 at Barnes & Noble West Bank. Novelist Laura Moriarty signs The Chaperone Wednesday, June 19th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Three local authors will discuss and sign their debut novels Wednesday, June 19th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Kevin J. Bitter, Sr. discusses Gavin's Caper. Gideon Hodge talks about Lilith's Redemption. And Arlene Marie Muller signs Destiny. David Berg signs Run, Brother, Run, A Memoir of a Murder in My Family, Thursday, June 20th at 5:30 at Garden District Bookshop. The summer solstice reading is Sunday, June 23rd at 3 at the Maple Leaf Bar. SOLA, the South Louisiana chapter of the Romance Writers of America, has opened the 8th annual Dixie Kane Memorial Contest, begun in 2004 to honor the late SOLA member Linda K. West, who wrote as Dixie Kane. This national competition offers writers the opportunity to have work critiqued by four industry professionals. First place winners in each category will be read by an editor of the Wild Rose Press. The contest is open to published and unpublished writers in the following categories: short, long series contemporary, single title contemporary, historical romance, paranormal, inspirational novel with strong romantic elements, romantic suspense, and erotic romance. Send in the first five pages along with a one-page synopsis of the plot and you're in the race. The deadline for entering is July 15th and there is an entry fee. For more information, go to solawriters.org. The Jane Austen Society of Louisiana is holding an essay contest this summer. Students are to write an essay of 1,000 words on a passage from any of the 6 novels. The deadline is August 1st, and students must be able to attend a roundtable discussion of the 10 winners August 28th, when the 2 best presenters will receive a cash prize. For more precise details, check out janeaustensocietyla.org or email wrd6@cox.net. And let's have some shout-outs for local authors. Kid Chef Eliana, author of Cool Kids Cook Louisiana, has received a Parents' Choice Award for her book. Several New Orleans writers were recognized at the recent Lambda Literary Awards in New York. Jean Radman won Best Lesbian Mystery for her book Ill Will. Former New Orleanian William Sterling Walker won in the Best LGBT Debut Fiction category for Desire, Tales of New Orleans, and Night Shadows, a horror anthology, edited by New Orleanians Greg Heron and Jean Redman, was nominated in the science fiction fantasy horror category. I should add that William Sterling Walker's short story collection, Desire, also won the Emerging Writer Award funded by Rob Burns at the Saints and Sinners Literary Festival. Good work, everybody! Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, Our Lady of Holy Cross College, and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press. The Reading Life is produced by Jenny Lawson and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. Or you can email us anytime at thereadinglife@wwno.org. I'm Susan Larson. Thanks for listening and keep reading.